The title of this message is The 4th of July, or Who Gave Us the Wealth? I'm going to look at a page from a book I have, and this book shows a map of the United States, and on the map it lists how, when all the territories, well, except for the 13 colonies, which expanded across the Appalachian Mountains, except for that section, kind of, that's like the start, although that was pretty great expansion too. All the things that America has picked up during the ways. They picked up part of what is Maine from Britain in 1842. They picked up Florida, 1819. Actually, they're all very interesting stories. Also, the Florida Panhandle, which at that time went all the way to Louisiana. They picked up the southern middle of America, you know, that Alabama, Mississippi, you know, if you look at Tennessee area, 1795 from Spain. They got the northern Ohio Valley, which would include Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, some other states. They picked that up from Britain, 1783. Each one's an interesting story. The big one, of course, the Louisiana Purchase, 1803, all of which you probably are fairly familiar with. They also claimed part of that territory in 1819, further from Spain. Of course, there's Texas and the whole big section north of Texas. Of course, you know about when Texas was a Lone Star State, and they stood alone and separated from Mexico. In 1845, the U.S. picked up Texas, and then certain lands along the border. 1846, they picked up the Gadsden Purchase in the southwest from Mexico. 1853, they bought it. They bought, there was a war as well, the Mexican-American War. But then after that, they bought California and a big, big chunk of the southwest from Mexico was ceded and bought for 1848. They got the Northwest Territory, which is a big line up beyond Seattle, you know, the northern Washington state and Montana. They got that from Great Britain, 1846. Also, U.S., of course, had Panama Canal, various Caribbean islands, and vast Pacific territories, a whole bunch of islands, where all those big Samoan football players are from that you probably see on TV, and the Philippine Islands, which are, if you look at a great map of the world, those islands like a chain, you know, Hawaii, Midway, Wake Island, and all those different, they have different names, Carolinas, Samoas, and the Philippines go almost all the way to China. So in a sense, the U.S. expanded from 13 little colonies in a fairly short period of time, from the Caribbean all the way across the Pacific to a vast empire. That doesn't even include Alaska, which when they bought it in the Lincoln administration, they laughed. Oh, what a waste of money that was. Of course, needless to say, it's a great value. And Alaska, of course, also goes deep into the Pacific. The question is, was that purely based on American cleverness, ingenuity, or was that the blessings from God? You know, when Napoleon and his top people sold Louisiana Purchase to the U.S., and that's a great involved story, too, to hear about, they said, we're certain the Americans will make the most of it like they do everything else they get. And, of course, they were right. There's a reason for that. And I'm going to tell you the reason for that. And I'm going to go back. If you go back to the Genesis 14, Sodom and Gomorrah, which one man jokingly said, those cities are sort of like the modern-day Las Vegas and San Francisco, if you think of it that way, maybe. But at any rate, those two cities, now they're smaller than they are now. I mean, to any big cities today, but those two cities got captured by some rogue, kind of like pirate kings. Just took everybody as slaves to be sold in slave auctions. And, you know, the world, by the way, the world has been pretty cruel until, and it's still a lot of cruel places. We look at things like human rights and think, wow, they didn't think of their human rights, but most of the world doesn't think of them. By the way, somebody's van door is open. They may have to worry about batteries running down. I'm just going to mention that in case somebody wants to check, see which van door is open. But the world has always been a pretty cruel place, most of the world history. And so Sodom and Gomorrah were taken captive by some rogue kings. They're being ferreted off somewhere, some slave trade and other horrible things. And one of them escaped. You know, he escaped, you know, he's in bad shape. He gets to Abraham and says, your nephew Lot is among these many other people that are being taken prisoner, being herded off somewhere. Now, when you think of Abraham, you think of this little shepherd guy with his tent and wife. But actually, in a relative sense, Abraham was wealthy, very blessed. One commentary said his settlement probably had 1,100 people in it. Now, they were making estimates. But he had over 300 fighting men. That much is well numbered. Well, when you consider women, children, and the elderly, you know, 300 fighting men, he got all his fighting men together, divided them like a general, outmaneuvered the opponents, and freed the people of Sodom and Gomorrah and all the stuff that the bad guys had taken. Obviously, God blessed Abraham. But the king of Sodom said afterwards, well, you know, we got to reward you for giving all our stuff back and freeing us. Of course, he did it because of his nephew, Lot. But still, the king of Sodom said, we got to thank you for all this. We're going to give you all this wealth, you know, pay you for saving us. Abraham said, no. And when you read the last part of Genesis 14, the reason Abraham said no was, he says, I don't want anyone to ever say or be able to say Abraham's wealth was because of the king of Sodom. You see the logic? His wealth was going to be based on God's blessings. That's pretty much what Abraham said. So we're going to go to the next chapter and see what God thought of what Abraham did and what he said. And I think it was a wise thing for him to say what he said. And God thanked him for it. We're going to try to put ourselves in Abraham's position here. 15:1. And after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Most people don't get visions from God. It's a very rare thing. Abraham got one, saying, fear not, Abraham, I am your shield and your exceeding great reward. Now, I'm going to be your protector. Don't worry about any of the friends of those kings, you know, counterattacking you. And Abraham said, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I am childless and the steward of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. In other words, God was going to reward him, but looking at it from Abraham's point of view, he's an elderly man now, and you can look at other places in there, but he has a large herd, you know, 1,100 employees. That's, you know, that's a pretty important guy. He's got cattle and sheep and camels and goats. You know, so if God gave him another 100 cattle or more servants, or more sheep, or more camel. You know, Abraham's saying, well, you know, I mean, it's nice that you're blessing me, but I don't really need anything physically. I want a son. That's what he really wanted. Now, we know now in retrospect that God was going to let Abraham live out the role that God the Father would play when God had to sacrifice his one, only, dearly beloved son. Abraham would get to play that role as a father of the faith. We know that now, that God had a reason for denying him a son all those years. But Abraham didn't know that at the time, and that's what he really wanted. Verse 5 and 6. And so God told him that he would have heirs, and we'll start in verse 4. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this shall not be your heir, but he that shall come forth out of your own bowel shall be your heir. In other words, you're going to produce from your own body. You're not going to have to adopt a kid or adopt your probably his executive assistant, his lead servant, Eliezer, who probably Abraham is going to reward. He probably was a nice man and, you know, probably was a very loyal servant. But that's not what Abraham wanted. I want somebody that comes out of me. And as a parent and grandparent, and most of us here are, I believe, we understand it, don't we? I think we really understand it. Out of your own bowel shall be your heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, look now toward heaven. So I guess it was night, and he looked up toward the stars, verse 5. And if you're able to number them, and he said to him, so shall your seed be. Think about that. And you think of a starry night in the Middle East where you didn't have all these lights like in today's world. You can really see the stars clearly. What are there, millions of stars? Billions of stars? He told Abraham, your seed is going to multiply to such a great extent it's going to achieve those kinds of numbers. By the way, I don't believe that was an exaggeration by any means. From one son, it would eventually get that way. Verse 6, and he believed in the Lord. And you know, L-O-R-D, that means the historical God of Israel, you know, the creator God, the I am God, the eternal God, as opposed to all the pagan gods. That God, Abraham believed. And, you know, Paul said he was blessed because he believed in God. It was based on faith, not on earning salvation. Not that you don't, God doesn't want you to obey his law, because people get those things all mixed up. But we all understand that pretty well, that grace and law work together. You don't need grace if there is no law. And nobody is good enough to earn his salvation perfectly by the law, so you need grace, and the two go together. But it's not one against the other like the world thinks. You know, it's not grace or the law, it's both. Anyway, but Abraham was saved because he believed, and it counted it to him for righteousness. Now, what I want to say is, if you look at the physical, we're just talking about physical blessings for America. I'm not talking about, although actually I may digress a little bit. We're mainly talking about physical blessings. The spiritual things primarily will come from Abraham's blessing in the future. Because the day will come when the whole world will be in Abraham's bosom. I mean, eventually everyone will become a spiritual Israelite. God's spirit will be poured on the whole world and everyone will be converted. But I'm going back to the physical for the most part. We're talking about physical blessings. But even within the physical blessings given to America, there are some spiritual aspects to it. If you were to look at the man, you know, Murray Allah, as an Australian, he's our area coordinator in our churches in Australia, he was saying that the Anglo-Saxons are cousins, if you like that term, and share the Ephraim Manasseh, you know, blessings that went through Joseph to Israel. But if you look at those nations, where has the Bible been most prevalent? It wasn't it the King James translation that practically changed the world? I mean, I know there are Bibles everywhere, and I'm not denying any of that. But are Bibles most prevalent in nations like Britain and America and Canada and Australia? And religion is relatively freer. I admit it. There are some problems in Canada, and I won't go into that now. But still, relatively speaking, religion is freer than it is in most other parts of the world. In most parts of the world, including one of the great churches of the world, they don't encourage people to read the Bible. They really don't. They say you have leaders to do that for you. That's mostly in America. And I believe if you looked at American history, look at all the presidents who quoted the Bible, you will see some level of even spiritual blessings in America. Now, we're mostly on a physical level. I'm admitting that. Now, some will say, well, you're saying the blessings of America come mostly because of the blessings God gave to Abraham, were a latter-day extension of that. They said, well, shouldn't we give credit to those blessings on our great leaders like Washington, Jefferson, Hamilton, Franklin, Lincoln, and maybe you could throw in Frederick Douglass. Anyway, but whoever you throw into the mix, whoever you put into that mix of great leadership, I would argue that the two are not contradictory. Do you realize that if I were to pick a nation, and I said, if I were a spirit being, I want to bless that nation, I could bless them with leadership. Good leadership is a blessing. Now, for instance, let's take George Washington. I know it's an old story, but it's one worth thinking about on the 4th of July. When George Washington, after he won the war, the Continental Army and all of its officers were not paid by the Continental Congress. Congress had their political problems because we really didn't have a good federal government. And anyway, the states kept most of the money and power, and they were petty. You know how Congresses are. So the soldiers and officers, we haven't been paid all we were promised. And we don't like the Continental Congress, but we like you, George Washington. We trust you, and you've really been the man for us and held us together. We're going to make you king, and we're going to go to Philadelphia. We are the army. Who's going to stop us? And we're going to take over the country. Now, how many in the history of the world, you look at the history of the world, how many leaders would have turned that down? Napoleon, when he helped settle down the French Revolution and became the hero of the army, did he say, oh, I don't want you to make me emperor? And we could rattle off many other leaders, couldn't we? Think about it. George Washington, not only did he say no, it's a great scene where he took off his glasses and said, I've gone blind fighting this revolution. We're not going to go back to another king. It was like going back from one George to another George. He refused to be king. And not only that, when it was over, he actually stepped down from power, went back to his plantation farm, whatever it was, and they later called him to be the first president. He was the indispensable man. So we can't do without you. And then after only two terms, he wasn't deathly sick or anything. He was reasonably healthy. He said, I want to set a precedence of two terms per president. I'm going to voluntarily, because I think the first election he got all the electoral votes. He was almost unbeatable election. I'm going to voluntarily give up power. Tell me how many countries in the history of the world that you get that kind of leadership. I'm just thinking. I can't think of too many. And you can say great things about Adams, Jefferson, Hamilton. I probably forget a few of the other leaders. Lincoln. You could all say great things about all of those men. Like Lincoln wanted to patch up the South and heal the wounds of the Civil War. We've had great leaders when we needed great leaders. That's part of God's blessing. Does that make sense? Most people don't think of it that way. And if God is starting to pull some of his blessings away from America, and I'm not saying he is, but maybe he is. Everybody make up their own mind. That means we're not going to get Washington, Jefferson's. We're not going to get men like that. Also, there's one more reason that America expanded across the continent with such unbelievable success and speed. When you look at it historically, and built the greatest nation the world has ever seen in world power. Just overwhelmed the other sides in both world wars. They did it because of population growth. You read good history books why various Indian tribes thought, well, those colonists, they can't, we'll get a bunch of tribes together, we'll stop them. The problem was demographics. The American birth rate was so high, it just overwhelmed the Indians and everybody else, the Spanish, the numbers. And they had relatively healthy, strong families. Just like God promised Abraham, country expanded to men. And, of course, Britain to some extent, Canada, Australia, wherever else I've forgotten that mix, New Zealand, did similar things. But even greater growth is coming in the world tomorrow. If you read the Bible, Judah and the other tribes are going to expand greatly. And literally, what God told Abraham will come true. Billions will eventually come out of Abraham's loins. It's literally going to happen. And I would just argue that on this 4th of July, when we enjoy the physical blessings, bounty, America does have the cheapest food in the world. We've had that for probably two centuries now. Most of America's ag problems have been too much. Most farmers, they fight prices. We got too much wheat, too much cotton, and we're about to. Most places are starving. Most people in the world have had tyrannical governments. They've lived under hard poverty. I mean, most of the world's history. I'm being relatively speaking, of course. I'm not saying America doesn't have problems. But God has blessed America with more bounty and more freedom, and at least when we needed it, pretty good leadership, when we needed it. Even people like Harry Truman, one of my new favorites, you learn more about him. I think he was a greater leader than most people appreciate, and maybe so is Eisenhower and others too. But the point I'm making is God has blessed America as part of his blessings of Abraham. And on the 4th of July, we should appreciate what we have, not because the people in this country are so great, but because God is blessing us because of Abraham. So enjoy it.